Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Oh! 104.5 The Zone, 819 The Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. The ever-popular Take 3 is coming up in about half an hour. Right now, always one of our favorite segments every week, so we'll be checking with Andy Staples of The Athletic, and we talk college football for a couple segments. Andy, what's going on this morning?
Wait, you don't want my takes on the Titans quarterback?
Give us your takes. Yes. Why not? We need your takes. Yes.
I have no takes. I feel like there's been an air of inevitability about the whole thing all year. So, like, when you get to this point after the rookie contract for first round guy, this is if you don't think he's the guy by this point, you probably move on. It doesn't seem.
Preach, Andy.
It doesn't seem like it's that complicated.
Yeah. So. Yeah, so, in some ways, you kind of know the answer to the question, whether you wanted to admit it or not, when you get to year five. Exactly.
Yeah. But so sort of like the coaches, like with these college football coaches, like Clay Helton's an interesting example of this. They played pretty well on Saturday night at Notre Dame. Like, USC looked good. Uh-huh. USC could potentially win, like, five of its last six games. But look at the recruiting. Look at what the tickets they're selling. It feels inevitable. They're going to do something.
LSU scored that monster win against Florida on Saturday night. And we've talked about this a little in shows past, but Ed Orgeron for years, or at least some of his career, was sort of a punchline. And we joked about him on here. But how has he evolved to the point where now he has a chance to really win big and get LSU into the playoffs here?
So I was talking with somebody about this last night. I remember going out in 2013 when he was the interim at USC to do a story on them. And I think he kind of figured out what it was going to be like if he ever became a head coach again, at least the culture part of it. Because he kept a notebook after Ole Miss and said, here's where I screwed up, here's what I do differently. So I think he figured most of it out. The part he had not figured out is the offense. He knew kind of what he wanted, but he could never really get the right mix of players and coaches to make that work. And I think finally he's got that this year. They hired Joe Brady, who had been with the Saints. He'd been Joe Moorhead's GA at Penn State. So he'd been in a really good college offense and then gone to a really good NFL offense. And he comes in as a passing game coordinator. He and Steve Ensminger, you see them together in the press box calling the plays. They've really just revolutionized that offense, and that was the missing piece. That was the part that, because you knew Orgeron could recruit. Like, you knew he'd get better offensive linemen, better defensive linemen in, and he had. And you thought, okay, you look at what he did at USC as the interim, you look at what he did at LSU the first couple of years. Culturally, it looks like he runs a pretty good program now. But could they have an offense that scared you? Well, I think that offense scares everybody now.
As long as we're talking about coaches, in the Big Ten, any chance Mark D'Antonio's time at Michigan State might be running short after, many more games like that 38-0 wipeout against Wisconsin?
I am very curious about that. So on my podcast this week, we talked about that a lot because, I don't think Mark D'Antonio is in a position where Michigan State would fire him because he's built up too much goodwill there. He's been so successful there. But remember, after last season, the offense was terrible last year. And his solution to that was not make wholesale changes on the offensive staff. It was just move everybody around to different positions, which I kind of admired it because I know continuity's been important to him, and it's been one of the things that has helped them succeed so much at Michigan State. And look, I don't want to see people get fired, so I thought, okay, great. Maybe this will work, and he won't fire anybody. But it didn't work, and it's been a disaster, frankly. And I wonder if, because the next step is you do have to make wholesale offensive changes. I kind of wonder if he'll say, you know what? I've had enough.
Yeah.
I don't want to fire everybody. I'm out. Like, I could see that happening more than I could see the school deciding to make a change.
Our guest is Andy Staples from The Athletic. We talk college football with Andy every Tuesday.
Well, Andy, man, I don't know about you, but I was a little surprised South Carolina beat Georgia, let alone then destroyed the hedges there after the game. Was that an accident, or was that purposely done?
What, the hedges?
Yeah.
Okay. What? You're ready for some hot horticulture.
You know, I care about the miscellaneous things that happen.
Some hot horticulture takes, Blaine. So here's the thing. That's a Chinese privet hedge. That's an invasive species. That thing will be grown back by this afternoon. They will have to trim that hedge this afternoon. Like, the only thing more hardy in the state of Georgia than privet hedge is kudzu. So, like, they can have a kudzu wall, I guess, and that would probably grow back faster.
Oh, but man, that's disrespect,
that hedge
though.
Is just fine. But, no, it is the ultimate sign of disrespect. Remember, where did South Carolina's head coach play football? Georgia.
Ooh.
So that was a shocking, shocking game on a lot of levels. And it was interesting because I don't think Will Muschamp called the best game toward the end either, but some of the decisions by Kirby Smart, you know, he's been criticized for a lot of his end-of-game decisions going back to the SEC championship game last year. And I feel like that all sort of came home to roost on Saturday because it's just, you know, some of these things you look at, like, why don't you try the 55-yarder with the kicker who's made one in the Rose Bowl? Mm-hmm. Like, and also, Rodrigo Blankenship made, like, a 52-yarder in the national title game. So why are you trying to run another – well, okay, you can run another play, but why are you trying to change the formation with 2 seconds on the play clock? Of course you're going to get called for an illegal shift. So these are things that – he didn't say Kirby Smart, who's not an offensive guy, did not say, oh, change the formation right now. But you shouldn't even be in that position. You should be kicking the field goal to try to win the game at that point. So I also wonder with their offense, you know, they want to go slow, and that's to help their defense. And they feel like, okay, they've got a really good quarterback who is great at diagnosing things. They can run an efficient offense. But you know what? In a situation like that, when you turn the ball over a couple times and you put yourself in a hole, but you are moving the ball, go up tempo. Like, when they have gone up tempo this year, it has worked very well. Mm. Get yourself some more possessions because you are moving the ball. So get yourself in a situation where you take the randomness of the turnovers out of it and just keep moving the ball on them and score some points. That's the part that they've been really reluctant to do that. And I feel like they could be a lot better offense if every once in a while they'd speed up because they're capable of it. They have the talent on the line and the back and the quarterback. The receivers I'm not so sure about. They don't seem to be able to get any separation. But that might also help them on that front too. So I think they just got to – they're not in that bad of shape. Like, they can still do everything they want to do. They can win the SEC East. They can win the SEC. They can get to the playoff, but they got to make a couple of little tweaks or they're not going to do it.
Right. The old Minnesota Golden Gophers, man, they beat Nebraska. I mean, they're undefeated, right?
They're
under the radar. Man, how good best friend there is doing a heck of a job.
That's right. Rowing the boat. So they are 6-0. They play Rutgers and Maryland next. So they're probably going to be 8-0 going into the Penn State game. If anybody predicted that before the season, I hope you bought your own private island by now with the money you've won. But, yeah, DJ Fleck's done a good job. And that team has been really interesting because – so they beat their first three opponents, which was South Dakota State, Fresno State, Georgia Southern, by a combined 13 points. And so after that non-conference, they're like, well, they kind of survived by the skin of their teeth against teams that aren't that great. What are they going to do when they start playing Big Ten teams? Well, they've actually gotten better as the competition's gotten better. So, and that's a pretty young team. You know, Tanner Morgan's a young quarterback. They made some wholesale changes in the middle of the season last year where they started playing a bunch of freshmen. They got torched by Illinois on the ground and fired the defensive coordinator in the middle of the season last year. And the guy they replaced him with has done really, really well. So they are really coming together. And you know, Fleck always says, year 3, year 4, that's when things really happen, and that's what happened for him at Western Michigan. it's happening for him in Minnesota. And people don't like all the slogans and all the high energy because it feels like a bit of a salesman type. But you guys know because you're in Nashville. You were there when James Franklin was at Vandy.
Mm-hmm.
James Franklin gets that same treatment from everybody everywhere else, except in the places where they know it. And I think James Franklin and PJ Fleck are not that different. They both are lightning rods for the other coaches. They just don't like them. But look at what they do. Look at their results. They get results everywhere they go.
Yeah, at the heart of it, they're good football coaches. Andy Staples is our guest from The Athletic. More with Andy coming up in a moment. 8:29 the time on 104.5 The Zone. This is the Wake Up Zone. We're coming right back. Four five the zone 8:36 the wake up zone powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Continue our weekly visit with Andy Staples, brought to you by Publix, where shopping is a pleasure. And Andy, of course, you can find his outstanding work on The Athletic.
Yes, Andy, I have to ask you about this deal about, you know, college players being banned because of all these betting rules, and even the students—they're trying to ban the students from even betting on a game where it's legal in the state that they're playing in. What are your thoughts? Where is this going, Andy?
Well, I the Purdue thing's interesting because I don't see how they enforce it with a student body. I mean, there are already rules against the players themselves gambling and against any of the athletic department personnel gambling. And I think you got to have some rules for this stuff because, you know, it does hit at the heart of the game. I mean, the integrity of the game is important. You got to know it's a fair and up and up contest. So I understand having rules for players. Having rules for the student body, you're not going to be able to enforce those. You can make all the rules you want. I'm sure Purdue students who are not athletes are going to bet on Purdue games. You're just not going to be able to stop that.
Hey, man, what about if a player lets a student then bet for them?
Well, that player would get in trouble if anybody found out. Because, again, there are rules about that, and there's not a lot of pushback against those rules either. I mean, listen, gamblers don't want people cheating in the games either. Gamblers want a fair and up and up game. So it's not like the whole paying players issue. There's not really two sides to it. Nobody wants to see games fixed. So they're going to have rules about the players not doing that.
But don't the students have an inside advantage? Let's say if you're Purdue, you see Rondell Jones now not walking with a boot on, but everybody's saying that he's right. Not playing when he is playing. That's right, Mark. It is an advantage. So don't they have one?
If you don't think gamblers don't know that, then you're kind of naive.
Well, some of them.
Exactly.
Some of them may not know until the last day.
Yeah. When I covered Florida for the Tampa Tribune in 2006, Marcus Thomas was one of their big defensive tackles. Mm. He'd been suspended indefinitely. And the thought was they're going to probably reinstate him for the LSU game. Come Thursday of LSU week, nobody has said anything about whether Marcus is going to play or not. The line moved 4 points in 4 hours. And then 2 hours after that, they announced that Marcus is going to play. So somebody, Vegas already knew. Somebody already knew. That sort of thing won't stay quiet long. So here's the thing. Like in your situation, let's say Rondell Moore is in a boot and you don't know if he's going to play. And all of a sudden, on a Tuesday morning, goes to class, no boot on. Yes, some kid's going to place a bet on his little app, but some other kid is going to take a picture of Rondell Moore with no boot on and post that to Instagram. So it will be in the world, and the people will know. So I just don't – you can't stop all of that. You can't stop everything.
Gotcha. Andy, Oklahoma, you know, beats Texas. Boy, what a game for CeeDee Lamb. Everybody talks about Jalen Hurts as a Heisman candidate, but how about Lamb and how electrifying he was?
That's got to be the strongest 190-pound dude in college.
Man.
Because when he was breaking those tackles, you're like, how is he doing? He's not that big, but he is playing like a guy who weighs 230. And, you know, at a certain point, I was like, how's Oklahoma going to get him the ball? Because Texas knows they're going to him. Texas knows he is Jalen Hurts' favorite target. And what does Oklahoma do? They run a flea flicker. And all of a sudden, there's nobody on him. It was unbelievable. But that's the thing. I mean, if you've got a guy like that who can – you can – one, he can play every receiver spot. So you can move him around. But also you can find creative ways to get him the ball. That's the secret to success. I mean, get the ball in the hands of your most special guy as many times as you can. And Lincoln Riley gets that. A lot of coaches don't.
You know, we talked about Minnesota and how they pounded Nebraska. And I thought from the beginning that Nebraska was a little bit overrated. I think they, you know, overestimated how fast Scott Frost has rebuilt that program. And to me, doesn't that sort of underline maybe some of his misgivings that Nebraska is really not Nebraska anymore, and that rebuild is going to be tougher than a lot of people think?
Yeah, when I saw that the media who covered the Big Ten had picked him to win the division this summer, I was like, why? What did you see that makes you think that? And I kept trying to tell people, yes, he took over UCF, and they had gone 0-12 the year before he took over. But the roster was good there. Like that was a unique situation where George O'Leary had essentially inspired a mutiny on the team, and the players had just shut down for O'Leary. But he had recruited great. So he had great talent for their league. So Scott Frost can come in, he goes, what are you, 6-7 the first year, and then 12-0 the next year. Well, Nebraska was way behind in the Big Ten in terms of talent. So I got embedded with Troy last year, the week they played Nebraska. And it was fascinating watching coaches break down their personnel, because what they saw was that Nebraska was a roster that Mike Riley had built for whatever reason to play in the Big Ten in 1995. It's like he was not coaching in 2015 when he was actually recruiting these guys. It was really weird. And what made it weirder was the Troy coaches at the time, because there was only one game of Scott Frost Nebraska tape, they kept having to switch between Nebraska to see the personnel and UCF to see the scheme. And you look at the UCF guys, you're like, holy cow, they're so much faster. So that's the thing. Scott Frost is probably going to need two more recruiting classes to really get Nebraska where he'd like it from a personnel standpoint. And the other part of it is that people are not considering TJ Fleck's doing a great job at Minnesota. Kirk Ferentz has always been doing a good job at Iowa. You know, Northwestern, Pat Fitzgerald is having a bad year this year, but you saw they took Wisconsin to the limit and they won the division last year. So it's not a bunch of slappies that he's going against. He's got to deal with that. And then, oh, by the way, they may send Ohio State or Penn State players.
What about what's your view from 30,000 feet of Vanderbilt, you know, getting their rear ends handed to them by, you know, not a very good UNLV team in Nashville?
You kind of expected that. You know, you don't get a lot of four-year starting quarterbacks at a place like Vandy. And so when you have one and then he's gone and his OC leaves and all that, you kind of expect to step back. But that one falls into the inexcusable category. That just shouldn't happen at this point, because Vanderbilt should have enough baseline talent to win games like that. Now, there are going to be years where you're down in the SEC. There are going to be years where you're like 1-7, 0-8 in the SEC, just because it's a cyclical game and Vandy has some challenges the other SEC schools don't. But you should not be getting beat by a Mountain West team like that.
Andy, we'll let you run. We don't have time for any more hot horticulture takes. I was going to ask you about crepe myrtles, but we'll do that again next. We'll do that next week, maybe.
Porterweed. Porterweed is the secret. Hummingbirds love it. Butterflies love it. Go get it.
Okay. See you, man. Have a good
Renaissance
week.
Renaissance, man.
See you guys.
All right. Sandy Staples from The Athletic joins us every week. He's brought to you by Publix, where shopping is a pleasure. Yeah, crepe myrtles. You could cut those one of those trees down to a stump. You'd be back by this weekend.
They're the worst.
Really are. They have festivals for those things. All right, when we come back, we're going to have a take three. So I got the questions ready to go. Those are coming up next here on 104.5 The Zone. Let's talk about Genesis Diamonds for a moment. You realize if you took the number of loose diamonds they have at Genesis and the number of engagement ring mountings they have, you come up with literally hundreds of thousands of combinations, and really maybe more than that. You compare that with what you get in an ordinary jewelry place, and they have maybe a handful of choices. The selection at Genesis is just over the top. whatever diamond size you need, a half carat, 5 carats, 10 carats are starting to get into Mark and Blaine's neighborhood. They've got it in stock. They don't have to bring it in from a broker like they do in other stores. They have one of the largest diamond inventories in America at Genesis. It's what they do. Whatever you like, whatever ring style, halo, vintage, modern, they have all the most popular styles from the top designers. If she's seen it in a bridal magazine or online, Genesis has it right now. So go to these Genesis diamonds and see all those choices, which mean you don't have to sell you on anything. You see as many diamonds and as many rings as you like, and you pick the one that's right for you and your budget. No pressure ever at Genesis. The service is the absolute best. A no-brainer. Take the selection, the guaranteed best price, the lifetime warranty, the education, the guidance. Check them out. Genesis Diamonds, Green Hills, and Cool Springs.